Thanks everybody for coming. As Veronica so generously described, I have a strong interest in insect-plant interactions and the chemical mechanisms that explain those interactions. And so when I got a job in weed biocontrol, it was like a dream come true, you know, because all too often it's basic research that doesn't relate to the real world, but here's a great opportunity to look for mechanisms that explain these interactions with a chemical basis. And indeed, it's like plenty of work to do. I can't do it all. So, and I'm going to run way over, but I'll try my best to keep on time. Thanks, Reeks, for showing us that it doesn't, Veronica's not going to come up here and wrench us off the stage. So, so most of my talk is going to be based around the Melaleuca system, Oxyops videosa, the first biological control agent released against Melaleuca. But first I want to just do a quick introduction here about specialization. Of course, these biocontrol agents are highly specialized, focusing their oviposition, they're feeding on a select group, a select taxon of plants. There must be something really important about that specialization, because the alternative, generalization, has significant benefits. There's a wide range of plants to feed upon. When the plant that you're focusing on, that you're specializing on, is unavailable or nutritionally inferior, it sure would be nice to have an ability to switch over to other species. So there's this trade-off that has occurred over the millennia that has really benefited those insects that we use for biological control. And some of those examples are increased efficiency of utilization of those nutrients, better abilities to metabolize, to break down those defensive compounds in plants in order that they can effectively utilize those plants. And then they've converted those defensive compounds oftentimes to host-finding cues. And I'll talk more about that in a few minutes. They also can have reduced competition for nutrients if a plant is chemically well-defended. Nobody else is feeding on it. If you can adapt to that well-defended plant, you've got abundant resources. And finally, on these three factors that I'm going to be talking about, protection can be derived from the host plant against generalist predators. So along that last topic, protection can be synthesized or it can be sequestered from the host plant. Herbivores that sequester those compounds can be very closely linked behaviorally and ecologically to the host plant, biological control agents. But not all of them are monophagous. There's a whole suite of specificities among these species that sequester plant compounds, from monophagous to polyphagous. But those that are specialized and that do sequester these plant compounds for defense can be very closely linked and highly dependent upon those plants to provide protection once they're released into the environment. So, like I said in the introduction, I'm going to be talking about Melaleuca. This is an invasive species that impacts the biodiversity of South Florida. It's an Australian plant that was brought in for ornamental and flood control and many, many purposes. It's a tree that's 20 to 30 meters tall. And the first insect that was released against this was this Oxyops videosa. Both the larvae, I got a pointer, the larvae and the adults feed on the foliage. And the larvae has this bright orange-yellow secretion that is very obvious, very conspicuous when you first encounter this. When you touch it, it smells very much like the crushed leaves of the plant. So we thought, aha, great candidate for sequestration of these compounds. The plants feeding, the derived from the plant. These are the compounds coming from the plant. They smell very much like those compounds. So what adaptive significance are these? So the most important predator in South Florida is probably the red imported fire ant. And this predator was selected because it's also compromised the success of several other biocontrol programs. So we set up arenas of captured colonies of fire ants. We put them into these glass tubes and we filled them full of water and plugged them with cotton. And you can see that there's 100,000 fire ants right here probably. And we offer them a choice between those Oxyops orange larvae here and a susceptible larva that didn't have any of that orange secretion. This is a water hyacinth weevil larva, Neocatina. And as you can see, hopefully, many of those fire ants are already aggregated around that water hyacinth larva. And within a minute or two, they'll come teeming out of the colony and they'll drag it inside and consume it. But very rarely would they have any contact with the Oxyops larva. We tested various life stages, larvae, pupae, and adults, and we see this progression from very well-defended, very bright orange larvae, kind of opaque pre-pupae, we think they're losing that orange secretion, to naked pupae that don't have any of that orange secretion. The pupae do enclose themselves in this earthen shell, bury themselves in the soil, but if we break open that earthen shell, we think that we predicted that pupa would be highly susceptible to predation. So we tested early instars, late instars, prepupae, and these naked pupae. And this is the encounter rate of these imported fire ants when tested against the red is the Neocatina, the susceptible larva, and the white is the Oxyops larva. And as you can see, as we predicted, the larvae were well protected. The prepupae that only had partial protection from this orange secretion were attacked about half the time. And the naked pupae were attacked just like the Neocatina larvae. So it looked like there was some sequestration going on. So we compared the chemistry with GCMS of the leaf extracts and that cuticle wash on the larvae. And we do find considerable similarities both quantitatively and qualitatively between the larval washes and the leaf extracts. So it looks like the insects are sequestering compounds from the plants and deriving protection from this generalist predator. So we were able to buy those compounds and coat them onto a very attractive bait, dog food that fire ants find irresistible. We coated those at physiological concentrations that came off of the larvae. And here's a suite of different terpenoids, sesquiterpenoids. And we found alpha-terpineol and veridofloral to be responsible for the protection derived by these larvae, and in this case coated onto the dog food, and it dramatically reduced or protected those dog food pieces against predation by fire ants. So this is really interesting. We found it very interesting and exciting. We found sequestration mechanism, chemical mechanism behind that sequestration and protection from fire ants. But as we started to look more and more at the chemistry of Melaleuca, we found a different, completely different chemical variant. Same species, but a different chemical variant. On the top is the chemical variant that I just tested, very high, rich in this one compound, veridofloral, pictured here. And other alpha-terpineol, the second compound that also protected the fire against fire ants, is this 1158 compound here, I think it is, 1150. And the 1075 is a compound that I added just as a way of quantifying the return on the instrument. But this other chemical variant we labeled nerolidol because of a high concentration of this one compound, nerolidol. And also has beta-caryophyllene right here, but it doesn't have the two compounds that protected the Oxyops larvae in the previous series of slides. So we asked the question, what would happen if we fed these larvae the nerolidol chemotype? Would they also be protected since that chemical variant lacked the protective agents that protected the larvae fed the veridofloral chemotype? Well, we did larval washes and leaf extracts, and indeed they're sequestering the same the compounds that occur in the leaves, just like they did when they were fed the veridofloral chemotypes. And then we applied those, we applied nerolidol at a range of concentrations that occur on the larvae. Those dog food pieces were protected just like they were protected when they were treated with alpha-terpineol or veridofloral. So from this, we said, okay, so they're very flexible in their ability to sequester the compounds available in the host, and they're deriving protection against natural enemies that way. What happens when you feed them other species? And this gets to the topic that I'm trying to present, is that specificity. Can this sequestration influence specificity once they're exposed to, once these insects are feeding on alternate species? In the field, they don't really feed on on this species. It's a Callistemon, oftentimes put into the Melaleuca genus, but it's a close relative. Also an ornamental imported from Australia. It's not a native plant, but it has very similar chemistry, but doesn't have the same chemistry that they could use to protect themselves against fire ants. A native species that they would feed a little bit on, they would oviposit only a small amount on in quarantine under laboratory artificial conditions, was this native plant, wax myrtle, Myrica cerifera. So what would happen if we fed larvae these plants and exposed them to fire ants? That was the question we had. The larvae fed the Callistemons are on the top. They take on kind of a black appearance. They don't look like the larvae that are fed the Melaleuca quinquennervia, the target weed over in the lower right. And those larvae that are fed the native Myrica cerifera are much, much smaller. They take on the same color, but when exposed to fire ants, we got the same result as if they were fed Melaleuca veridofloral, Melaleuca quinquennervia nerolidol. They are able to absorb whatever compounds are available and derive protection against natural enemies. This natural enemy that we tested anyway. So this doesn't really indicate that they're deriving specificity, but they are deriving protection against generalist predators by absorbing whatever terpenoids are available in the host plant. So conclusion of this series of studies, I got more to come, is that the larvae sequester these terpenoids, and they derive protection against this generalist predator by sequestering these compounds. And the sequestration is flexible. They're taking advantage of whatever compounds are available in chemical variants of the target weed, or in other plant species that they don't really develop well on, they don't oviposit on well on in the field, but under laboratory artificial conditions, they also derive protection from these other species. So host specificity does not appear to be dictated by the availability of these defensive compounds. So now I'm going to talk more about other types of specificity studies that we've been doing in the lab. Host selection occurs by a number of environmental factors. Of course, you know I'm going to talk about chemistry, which has probably gotten the most press time. Undoubtedly, it's got the most press time. Chemicals in the environment, either through taste or volatile cues in the headspace above plants, are very important to insects when they're selecting host plants on which to lay eggs and begin feeding. But color, maybe you saw the presentation on Monday with Myriophyllum. Color is actually also is known to be important, especially as one of the environmental cues that insects use in selecting host plants. But size and shape and texture are also important, but I'm just going to be talking about chemistry. So Reeks talks about compiling test plant lists. It's one of the most important steps in the whole process. We can't test all the plant species out there, but we got to test the most vulnerable ones. And in doing so, we start with the most closely related species. And in this case, the genetic varieties of the weed, the two chemotypes of Melaleuca would fall into that category. Members of the same genus or very, very close relatives, such as the Callistemons that were listed here. Members of the same family are also compiled, threatened and endangered species in the same family. And also species of similar morphology and biochemical makeup. So we have this Wapshear's centrifugal phylogenetic model, probably very familiar to most of you, where we have the target weed in the middle, and then we go out from there. Members of the same genus, members of the same family are also included in this test plant list. And for this example, Oxyopsis melaleuca, we tested members of 40 plant families, 80 plant genera, a total of 120 plant species. And I'm going to quickly summarize years and years of data here on a couple of slides. This is Oxyops videosa, when the testing results from quarantine when they were fed this 120 plant species. And of course, I can't fit all that data onto a single slide, but I tried to summarize it here. The Myrtaceae species are listed here across the bottom. I didn't have room to label them all. And these unrelated species are out here. And then the behavioral responses to these different, or nutritional responses of these insects to these different plants are on the y-axis here. So complete development would be on this top line. So if Oxyops exposed to Melaleuca was able to obtain complete development, I extended that line, that vertical line, from the base up to the top. So you can see here that on Callistemons and on Melaleucas, they were able to complete development. There was adult feeding, there was oviposition, there was late larval, early larval development. On the Melaleucas and on the Callistemons that occurred. On other species in the Myrtaceae, there were some adult feeding, so the cues for adult feeding were present. There were some oviposition, so the oviposition cues were present, but the life cycle of the insect was stopped there. There was the nutrition of the plant was unsuitable for larval development. Neonate development did not occur. So there's some overlap in the chemistry of these things that elicited oviposition and adult feeding, but there was enough differences so that larval development didn't occur on everything. So you can see that the Melaleucas, of course, and the Callistemons were suitable hosts. And then Myrica, remember this plant I showed you a few minutes ago? This is that native plant, unrelated. It also appeared to have similar adult feeding, oviposition, late larval development, but the life cycle is broken because there's no neonate development on that plant. Well, I can go through several species here, and I'll do that very briefly because I don't have very much time, but another species that we never released was this sawfly, Lophrotoma. This species oviposited on several species of in the family Myrtaceae. Late larval development occurred on a handful of Melaleucas and Callistemons, and complete development occurred only on those Melaleucas and Callistemons. This species probably would have been suitable in terms of specificity, but it was never released for other reasons. And notice out here is Myrica cerifera, no oviposition, but late larval development did occur on this species, so I suspect that feeding stimulants were present in this species. So there's arrow for Myrica cerifera. The second insect that was released is this psyllid, Boreoglycaspis How do you say that? Like he said, sorry, I'm talking too fast here. This would oviposit widely, even you know, other genera within the Myrtaceae beyond the family, but nymphal development was restricted to just a handful of species, and indeed complete development was only on the target weed. So oviposition stimulants, maybe it doesn't use them, I don't know. Nymphal development, well, nutritionally, several species appear to be suitable, but complete development was not possible on anything else. So the clistomins were right here. So the four species that I'm going to cover here is the Fergusonida. This is an association between the fly, a Fergusonida fly, and a nematode. And this was highly specific. Oviposition scars were found, not eggs necessarily, not gall formation, but some scars were there, suggesting that there might have been oviposition stimulants in other Myrtaceae genera, not just the target weed, nothing outside the family. Clistomins, again, are right here. It only would complete development on the target weed, so this was released. So again, you've seen this already once. This is the ornamental introduced from Australia. It's some people regard it as a congener, but it's a very closely related species. Myricus, this native plant that is unrelated, and to just give you an example of how unrelated it is, it's not in the same family, it's not in the same order. Myrica is in the Phagales. The Callistemons and the Melaleucas are in the Myrtales, so very distant. And I suggest that convergent evolution has probably been the result of these similar oviposition stimulants in these widely unrelated species. So, first instar larvae, Oxyops, put onto Myrica, 100% mortality. They did very well on the others. If you take third instar larvae, you feed them Melaleuca, and you transfer them over to Myrica, you get about 20% survival under laboratory conditions. But those very few larvae that survive are stunted, they're very small. They're about half the biomass of larvae fed Callistemon and Melaleuca. So really a poor host, the neonates all die. Those that are transferred as third instars really don't do very well. So we did calculations of efficiency of converting digested food into plant biomass, trying to get at, are there toxicants in these plants that prevent them from efficiently converting what they eat, digest, into insect biomass. The yellow line is those larvae that ate and digested Melaleuca. As you would expect, they increase their consumption, digestion. They're going to more efficiently add biomass to themselves. The Callistemons in white and red were not as efficiently converting what they digested into insect biomass, but they did, you know, they survived fairly well. They achieved, you know, pretty good biomass. But those larvae that were fed Myrica, this is the native plant that's unrelated to the Myrtaceae, they didn't even increase in their biomass when they had a slight increase in digestibility. Thanks. So this indicates to us that there were toxic components. I got to really move here in Myrica that prevented them from the neonates from having high level of survival. In fact, all the neonates died. So is it different chemistry? Well, I could just count up the compounds that occurred in Myrica and compare those to the compounds that occurred in Melaleuca. And it looks like, you know, considerable similarity. There are 23 compounds in Myrica that also occurred in Melaleuca. Similar results occurred in Callistemon. This is just a very coarse summary of a whole lot of work. No estimate of qualitative or quantitative amounts. This is purely qualitative. Some of those examples are here, nerolidol, alpha-terpineol, terpenoids, 818-cineol. But if you look at the unique compounds, Myrica had seven compounds that were not found in their Callistemons and were not found in Melaleuca. And these, I suspect, are the toxic components that prevent the neonates from completing development when they're fed Myrica. And this is what I assume is causing this apparent toxicant effect by this low efficiency of converting digested food into biomass when larvae were fed Myrica cerifera. So, okay, one last section here. Sorry, I'm going to scream through this stuff. I got a minute and a half probably. So we collected aerations, volatile compounds that are above these different plant species with this aeration system. Clean air is passed through these cylinders. These are the plants of the different test plants and the target weed, and they captured those volatiles here. Could then wash those with organic solvent, inject them into a gas chromatograph, in this case mass spectrometer. And then you've seen this already. This is a typical GC-MS profile given to us by this really nice electronic detector. But of course, insects don't use these really nice GC-MSs. If they could, they probably would be much different in their specificity. But they use antennae, and this is one of those Oxyops antennae right here. On the club, they have densely packed olfactory receptor neurons, or antennal sensilli. These sensilli are porous. They allow the penetration of these volatile compounds in the headspace above these insects. And there's a receptor site in a protein that is a lock and key mechanism that once the volatile compound that neuron is tuned to is met, it sends a neural response to the brain, informing the insect of the presence of that compound. So this is that same GCMS profile on the top. This is a nerve cell responding to a component of that GCMS profile. This is the neuron at rest. This is the neuron excited by the presence of one of those compounds that came off the GCMS. And this is a conversion of these nerve impulses into a more stacked, I guess, arrangement. So I could compare the GCMS peaks with the peaks in the neural responses. So the insect nerve responded to this compound, it responded to this compound, and so forth. It's kind of messy, so I thought I knew what these compounds were. I put them back into a vial and re-injected, cleaned up the preparation. Indeed, they did respond to these five compounds. That nerve responded to these five compounds. Well, not all nerves are the same. Some are specific. This one responded only to alpha-terpineol. This one was apparently blind to the early part of the chromatogram and only responded to late parts of the chromatogram. And this responded to terpininforol. So I inject, and this one had chiral sensitivity, more responsive to the S form of linalool, also responsive to the R form of linalool. So I injected these at a range of concentrations. I got a range of responses, number of spikes per second, and I was able to find that 1,8-cineol was probably the most important compound to this insect. It elicited about 80 spikes per second when applied at this with this technique, and terpininforol could be detected at I think that's picograms, about 0.1 picogram concentrations. Okay, final slide here. Sorry. Okay, you know, 10 years worth of work right here. We tested numerous species of Myrtaceae. These are all the genera that we tested. These are the species of those genera that were tested, and these are the number of those species that contained those six behavioral compounds, behavioral cues that I found with my antennal preparations in the previous slide. The Melaleuca and the Clystemans have all six of those compounds, but none of the other congeners or species of those congeners had all six. Some had two, some had three. And Myrica, no surprise there, had all six of those compounds. But because of the presence of those seven unique compounds, it was not nutritious to the insect. There were toxic components. So I summary there. You can read it, but I'm going to have to stop there. Thank you.